The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome into the second hour of the programme. I hope you're very well this morning, wherever you're listening to us, in the car, at home, at work, wherever, up Mount Errigal, wherever you happen to be. Up Mount Errigal? Up Errigal. Right, thanks for all of your comments. In relation to our conversation just before the news at 10 there, I was very sad to hear Kathleen's plea. She's so right. There are so many cats and dogs without homes. I was feeding two stray cats. I got to help a cat and keep him as a result of a voucher from the ISPCA. I just had to add 15 along with it. The cat needed care for his foot, and to get it neutered, the ISPCA provided me with a voucher for him to get neutered. Neutering is so important as it means there are less stray cats. I'm fully behind Kathleen. Now, that role that the ISPCA has, it continues in that role, okay? So we're talking here about the animal centre, so that doesn't mean necessarily that those... I don't think that those functions of the ISPCA are no longer there. Our government is a lackey of corporate and the World Bank. 10% of the population in Ireland own 48.6% of the country's wealth, and they don't care about Irish farmers or the poor. Ireland's way up in the inequality index, yet we're repeatedly told Ireland is a rich country. We're being gaslit at every turn. Well, that's something I said yesterday, and I didn't say we were being gaslit. It's the gap between us being this apparently wealthy country and the fact that so many people don't feel that. Greg, I don't know what to do with the weather dropping. I know I cannot afford to heat my home. What a horrible situation to find yourself in. And it's the same with many people. Just double checking. Have you ensured that you have made sure that you don't qualify for any allowances or what have you? I will say to you that St. Vincent de Paul is there to help people. There are also some schemes from government as well. My point being is that if you haven't checked in to any of that, please get back in contact with us and let me know, and we can try to get a list together of things that you can try. But you sound like a perfect candidate for support, say, for instance, from St. Vincent de Paul. Back to animals. There is no such thing as one answer to a question. There is more to why Letterkenny was closed and not Longford. Do we know what money Longford was making? Well, we did do quite an exhaustive interview in relation to that. I might chop it out and put it up. The bottom line was that they closed. They had to close our centre, and the most logical choice for them to close was Letterkenny. There was I believe it was a Oireachtas committee meeting where someone very high up in the organisation said that they perhaps needed somewhere more central, though that was played down and poo-pooed. Greg, is there any word on the condition of the roads from Ballybofey to Letterkenny? If anyone can let me know what they're like. Generally speaking, at this point, I imagine that those roads, the main roads, are passable with care. There are hot spots where there are problems, but from my experience in driving Ballybofey to Letterkenny, you know, maybe around about Drumkeen, etc. But normally they're pretty safe to drive at this time of the day. With care, let me know. Staying on the roads, though, Greg, the back of Errigal, still very bad. Avoid if possible. Right, so that is, again, one of these hot spots in inverted commas. And lock salt for regular cars is unusable today. You won't get up and over the high bits there as well, just in case you happen to use that route. All right, so it is Thursday, which means it's jackpot day for the bingo. And you are supporting Vision Island whilst having a bit of fun, the ultimate paying it forward. You get to have a bit of crack. You get to potentially win hundreds of euro a day, and it is hundreds of a day as it rolls over, or thousands on a Thursday. And people are winning all of the time. And you can get your books in many, many retail outlets right across the Northwest. And it's not a club. You can start playing for 1 week and never play again. You can join whenever you like. But you're supporting Vision Ireland, and it's one of the key fundraisers for the services that they provide here in Donegal. So good luck if you are playing today, and well done if you're playing today. You're doing a good thing. Okay, so we've talked much about the condition of roads in this very mild, compared to what we might get, blast of winter that we've had so far. Kathleen, though, has been out and about, doing the school run, Kathleen. And it's not just the roads, is it? The roads we kind of know when they're looked after. Your experience has been really centering on the footpaths.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. Actually, this morning I was just dropping my grandchildren off to school, and I pulled outside the school gate, and quite a dozen, not quite a distance from the school because of the traffic. So when the children went to get out, the footpath was so slippy. I got out of the car myself to help them and nearly fell. But anyhow, with that then, I noticed children, as the parents were pulling up against the gate, or the footpath, the children were all slipping, sliding, literally falling to their feet. So just curious, I walked with my children up to the gate and helped them in, very cautiously myself, afraid to fall. And just as I got to the gate, I just asked a member of staff, mentioned, I said, that footpath is like a bottle. And she says, unfortunately, we're unable to throw anything outside the school gate in case someone falls. Now, I understand that, disputing the staff member, what they can or cannot do. But is this something that the council should be doing? Because the footpath is ridiculously wide that it's not a case of one step and you're over into the safe ground. So you have to walk a distance. So my concern is, because this is the first day of this real frost, and looking at it now, you think it's lovely, but the footpaths still haven't cleared.
Yeah.
Will it still be the same at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock when the children come out in their hundreds and slipping and sliding? Just how do we help the school? I actually rang the council, just myself curious as to what happens. And again, there's different areas that are allocated that salt or whatever grit is thrown. In this particular case, obviously, the schools weren't done, or this particular school wasn't done. But I was told that in some places there are grit left at the side of the road, which I know in my own area, and it's up to the individuals or the public to throw it. So my thought was, well, if I had a bag of salt in the boot of my own car, I would have thrown it over that path to help the other children coming in today. But it's just a funny thing that who is actually responsible, or what are we supposed to do to safeguard our children and parents coming in and out of the school?
Yeah, Kathleen, and I can understand, I think the conversation you had with the member of staff was a casual conversation, so we can't necessarily draw an official response from it. But it sounds a little bit like that they were saying that if they began treating it, that then they would become responsible for it. Maybe then they could be taken to court if they treated it today, but not tomorrow when someone slipped, because they could say, well, the school was looking after it on Thursday. Why weren't they looking after it on Friday? I wonder, is there a liability concern for the likes of a school in looking after the public footpaths?
Yeah, in fairness, no, I'm not blaming the school, and it's not a very casual comment. But I do think, should it then not be the council, because it is the council that these wonderful footpaths have been made, that are so wide anyhow, is there not that they should be responsible for, as well as doing the roads, if they're gritting those roads, should it not the footpaths be done as well?
Yeah, but the counterpoint to that would be then, I suppose, Kathleen, where does it end? Does the council have the resources? Because whichever school you were at, there could be 5 schools in that town. There's another 4 in another town. And my word, then do we start on main streets? Like, where does it end, I suppose, Kathleen?
I understand, Greg. Yeah, I know there's always some. But for the very short, although from now on, we don't know how many days we're going to get like this, but that some system would be put in place for the safety of the children, and not just the children, but the likes of me as a grandparent walking with children. I could fall and break bones maybe easier than the young children. But it's just genuine concern of how dangerous it actually is, because I witnessed, while I was in my car trying to pull out of the gate or of the road again, 8 children from 8 different vehicles actually got out of their car and fell.
They probably thought it was great crack altogether, I wonder. But you know yourself, it's all fun and games till someone ends up in ED. I suppose, really, Kathleen, the only solution I could see to this, and maybe it happens already, especially on main streets or schools, is that each building is responsible for some of the footpath in front of them. Because I can't see, really, if the truth be told, how a local authority could take that responsibility. But if every home or business maybe looked after, you know, the path in front of them, it might help. But I don't know, how do we coordinate that?
Yeah, in fairness, and like that again, I'm not wanting this to be put on any individual member
of
staff.
No, of course not. I know
that. Have to take this on. It is just, as I say, the safety. I still think it is a council issue rather than a school issue, to be honest.
Yeah, and listen, you've started the conversation. It's very valid and one we need to have because, you know, someone goes over, it can be very, very serious. Kathleen, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it. That's a concerned grandmother with her experience of dropping her grandchildren off at school. What do we do about the footpaths? As I say, we're not over-exaggerating things. This is kind of our first blast of it, right? But still... Still, we need a plan because we have these conversations every year. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, of course. Back to the roads, thank you. And this is the hive mind. Balabafeta Letterkenny is completely fine to drive through. That's just in response to an earlier caller. That's what I suspected, but I hadn't been on that road today, so I didn't want to say that. It's normally one of the what my experience of driving is the most, like, say. A lot of people be very concerned about the gap, and rightly so. But I find it often the best treated road, and arguably then one of the safest roads because it's so well known as generally being dangerous. But there are a couple of spots, particularly down by the lake. There's a hollow with sort of like a S bends that always seems to capture the ice, and even once treated, can get very nasty once again. A caller says Enoch Burke has been sadly imprisoned for the fourth time simply because he will not kiss the feet of the high lords of the woke agenda of grooming children and paedophilia, which is quite an extrapolation. Has he actually been arrested, though? Because I've seen a few videos posted by his family where the Gardaí have been looking for him. I haven't seen any of him actually being arrested. The judge in question is less than... Well, I can't say that. The judge, this person doesn't agree with the fact that this isn't about transgenderism, but instead some court order he's conveniently using to support the Dublin woke establishment. Irish judges used to be respected primarily for their wisdom, but that is no longer the case with most, unfortunately. And they go on to say that Ireland has become a woke democracy where judges use judicial terrorism to try to kill the truth. Listen, at the end of the day, the case was put before the judge. Where the school was saying, look, this guy doesn't no longer work here. We don't want him turning up. That's what the judge has to consider. You know, that is what the judge's consideration is. But I take your point. You can link it back if you so wish to the greater issue there. Senator Eileen Flynn joins me now. Senator, how are you keeping? You've got your seat.
Hey, Greg, how's things?
Things are good. Now, I wasn't aware of this, actually, that you had a really early diagnosis of COPD, and I suppose you've used your own experience to raise this issue. But how much are you comfortable in talking about your own health issues in this regard? Because, as I say, I wasn't aware of them at all. At least was I aware how serious they are.
Yeah. In 2018, when I was early pregnant with Billy, I kept getting infections for years, and I went to Sligo University Hospital, and I met with a doctor called Catherine Filan, and she's a consultant for lungs and chest, and I was speaking about the infections, and she said to me, you could have asthma. And I said, well, look, I'm 28. I said, I want to be examined for COPD as well. My mother had COPD. And she said to me, no, you're too young for it. And I remember looking at her right in the eye and saying, please, I said, listen to me. And will you add 12 years on to my life? And that's exactly what she did. And that same day, she tested me in her clinic for COPD. And she said, you have early stages of COPD, Eileen, she said, and I'll never forget it. It was great to get the diagnosis. I went back and I visited her for years, and she actually rang me when I was appointed in 2020, and she said to me, you're one of the most confident patients I've ever met, she said. And, you know, I even continued to meet her after that, like every few months she'd look after me, you know. And in March 2023, I was in Letterkenny Hospital. My left lung collapsed. I was really sick, Greg. I was in there for 6 days. Now, usually when a lung collapses, you're in probably for 24 hours to 48 tops, you know. And I remember going into the A&E thinking I had a wee chest infection, similar to how I am now, actually. It's a bad day, and thinking, like, you know, can I just get a course of antibiotics, please? Like, I was a week really sick with my lungs, and I thought it was just an infection. And I went into the A&E. I got a letter from the now doc, and I remember thinking, no, I'll go tomorrow when I bring the girls to school, etc. Got up at 7 o'clock, was in Letterkenny Hospital for about 8:30. And I got an x-ray done, and I'll never forget it. The doctor rings me and he says to me, are you still in the hospital? I said, yeah. And he goes, don't move, I'll come out and get you. And I got this gown on me, and it was all hell broke loose. And I couldn't grasp the fact that it was so serious. And I remember saying to him, am I going to die? And he just said to me, anybody that comes into A&E, is that like, if you come in as an emergency, say with your lungs or chest, whatever, is that a risk of dying? Like, you know what I mean? Because if it's an emergency, if you can't be, if some people just don't come around.
I understand where he's coming from, but I'd be like, no, could you say something a bit more positive, please?
Yeah.
And so, and you'd been functioning with a collapsed lung.
Astonishing. Yeah, and stuff. I'll never forget a woman doctor said to me, we think you have this about 4 weeks.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was so, so surreal, you know. I remember making a wee video for me children thinking this is it, like. And, you know, my mother passed away at 48 years of age with her lungs. She died with a massive heart attack. She took a heart attack in the middle of the night, and like, it was early morning, the 12th of October. And then that was at 6 o'clock, like in the morning, sorry, she took her first heart attack. They resuscitated her, brought her back. And then at about 10 to 10 on the 12th of October 2000, she took another heart attack. And that was it, you know, that was it. But the queer thing is actually that my mother's lung collapsed when she was young. And so did my father's lung,
right.
which is really strange, you know.
Yeah.
And within the traveller community, actually, we are more at risk of having bad lungs, chest, due to living conditions.
Mm. Yeah, of course. Yeah, and it actually does make sense if you think about it. Before I move on, though, I think it's a very important lesson. We talk about it on this show. Is to trust your body, to trust your family history, and to advocate for yourself like you did those years ago, because COPD is one of those conditions, the sooner you get it, the better the outcome. So that little bit of self-advocacy you did, you might be in a completely different situation right now if you hadn't.
You know, Greg, there's over 30,000 people in this country at the moment with COPD. And, you know, we need wraparound supports, and like asthma as well. I'm sure there's many of your listeners, their child is born with asthma or will grow to have asthma, which is a different form of COPD as well, you know. And like that, you can live with COPD. It can be managed, but we really need a wraparound supports for consultants, for community support as well. Because for some people, it's an absolutely daily struggle. Like, since my lung collapsed, I haven't been able to go on my walks. I really do struggle to do stuff that I was able to do.
So you'd be conscious, even would you be, say, for instance, if you have a long presentation to the Shannon, you would be conscious, would you, that you're going to have to pause, or you'll feel the pressure for delivering, you know, orally for a long time?
Yeah. And like, you know, you get, I like, even now, it's actually funny that you just feel so short of breath.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And like, you stop, you get a drink of water. Sometimes it's like you have a sore throat, or a lot of the time people has mistakes for me, my emotions, that she's upset, and I'm not upset. I'm just trying to take a breath. But I will say, like, you know, the county council, politicians should be more aware of COPD, have those supports in local communities, because I know in Dublin they have a lot of supports for COPD, but they have little or no supports in the likes of Donegal, Sligo. Now, I have to say and give credit where it's due when it comes to the consultants in both of the Sligo and Letterkenny when it comes to lungs. You know, and I think it's great that we have such a good service, but again, we need to invest as much money as possible, and it's something that we'll keep running up in the Shannon. Yeah,
and that was the thrust of your recent contribution. I won't keep you hear the bell going. I just have a particular interest in this this work that you've been on doing to reclassify the language in the bill as it relates to child pornography and have that replaced with accurate language. Just very briefly, I know that was back up in the last couple of weeks. What is the progress in relation to that, if any?
There is a progress. Basically, I'm going to be very blunt and say that Jim O'Callaghan has got our idea from our office and turned it into his own.
Oh,
the
right,
government,
well, mm.
the government does that a lot with some good pieces of legislation. And for me, I'm just not that full of my own importance. But I will do as my colleague Catherine Connolly, Deputy Connolly at the time, would say to me, you know, own your work. And basically, the minister is bringing in Jim O'Callaghan is bringing in a big piece of legislation over the next 3 weeks, which will include changing the term child pornography to child sexual abuse by materials. And you know something, Greg, I'm going to own that. I'm going to show up in the Dáil when that's getting passed. I'm going to stand beside the minister, get in the photos with him and say, this is our work. Because we did it for the last 4 years in our office, Jessica Bray and Corey O'Gara.
Well, hopefully he's gracious enough to recognise that. Some issues go above politics, and I think it would only be fair if he recognised the efforts that you and your people have made in bringing this. I feel it very important. Language is important, so I've been tracking it myself over the last couple of years.
It is our piece of work. We're delighted that the minister has taken it for his own, and he'll bring it through the next stages. But as I said, I will be owning it because we've done it. And I will say that I'm now working on a piece of legislation around keeping our children safe and AI. You know, like, I had an idea, and I'll say the idea, but maybe it'll get me into trouble. But anyway, AI, I was going to email around politicians and have photos of them that they didn't like, you know, that they would, but this can happen to children. So anybody out there can actually put a photo of children naked and these images of our children online, and there's no rules or regulation for it to stop happening. Now, in our office at the moment, we've nearly have the bill done. We're working with our counterparts in Australia, and they're also working on a piece of legislation around AI as well, you know. So I just think it's really important.
And I'll just make one point in relation to that. You know, you get a Miriam O'Callaghan or a Simon Harris, their image being used to advertise some sort of fraudulent thing on Facebook, they go furious and they move heaven and earth to get it removed. We're contacted by mums and dads and granny and granddads of young girls who are 13 or 14 and have had their head put on a nude image and struggle to get any coverage of it at all. So, you know, I wish you luck in your endeavours in that regard. Thanks so much for your time, Senator. I do appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Greg, and take care. Thanks a million. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Right, that was Senator Eileen Flynn, who I wasn't aware of suffers with COPD. She was diagnosed in her late 20s, and really quite remarkable. She's had a collapsed lung herself now and was walking around with that potentially for a month. Her late mum did, and her dad as well, also all three having a collapsed lung. So, and of course, as soon as the x-ray showed that, it was treated as the medical emergency that it is. A caller says, my husband was diagnosed with a mild form of COPD. Even with care, it went on to become pulmonary fibrosis. He had 18% lung function and my husband passed away in August. I'm so sorry for your loss. But this listener agrees that we need to take COPD more seriously. as it can develop into fibrosis. Just because it's treatable doesn't mean that it's not serious. Of course it's not. And that's why we decided to give it the platform today. And again, my deepest sympathies to you on the loss of your husband. I'm just also, in addition to that, concerned with, you know, what impact we might see in the years ahead on our young people who are living in defective concrete block homes. I know personally of young people, whose children have developed lung issues, asthma, with no medical history of it in the family, asthma and other lung complaints because they're breathing in this dirty, wet air in these defective concrete block homes. Some of them council homes, some of them privately owned. And they've got this black mould in the house. And, you know, like if I was living in a council house and I would see, I was seeing my, my children deteriorate like that in a property I was paying rent for, I'd be saying, you know, like from a legal point of view, what's the responsibility here? What are we, what are these young people, and not just young people, by the way, I recognise this is older people as well, but we're talking about young people here. You know, what's going to be the impact on them in their 20s, 30s and 40s in terms of their lung health? Is that going to be the big scandal or one of the big scandals out of a huge scandal? A generation of young people potentially with lung conditions? We already have a high rate of lung and sort of chest-related admissions to hospital here, but I genuinely worry, is the next scandal, the next the generational scandal in 10, 20 years, a generation of people that were... we had no choice but to rear them in these homes, and they are living with lung conditions as a result. Because I interviewed a lung specialist on this show years ago, and I asked a question specifically about damp and mould and the impact on young people's lungs, and he was like, "No, this is a red flag for causing this, that, and don." And I cut it out, and I put it out on social media as much as I could, and I tagged government ministers into it because I was saying, look, we're not really talking enough about, it's not just bricks and mortar here and a sort of emotional stress and a shortage of money and all that type of stuff. This is a potentially generation. There could be babies and there are babies born in these, into these houses. And I'm sorry, I hope I don't sound like I'm overstating it. But, you know, I just have my concerns that, that a generational problem could be young people who we had no choice but to raise in DCB homes and them having lasting lung problems as a result. And I just hope that that is not the case. If you want to talk about that, COPD, people are very caring. Dolores is asking, does Eileen use the Medicare mask at night? I didn't see that, Dolores, in time to ask. And I don't, I didn't know how far I could step into, you know, the personal elements of that with Eileen because I didn't speak to her in advance. But anyway, thank you. And I'm sure your suggestion or question comes from a position of care. And good morning to Dolores, Audrey, Kathleen and Charlie and Kathy, amongst those who are watching the show across our various platforms. We have a lovely viewership on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and lots of people watching it at home or I actually know for a fact in some places, residential care settings. It's on in the corner as well. And also to those of you watching on Facebook and on the X platform, it's great to have you on board and it's wonderful that you're joining the majority of people listening to us on their radios and smart speakers across the Northwest and beyond. Now, the Irish Farmers Journal has been working with the Irish Farmers Association, visiting a number of states across Brazil as part of a trip to look at Brazilian beef production systems. Adam Woods is beef and suckler editor and joins us now. Good morning, Adam. Thank you so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
So for those who may not be aware, Adam, why would this be a particular focus of an investigation and in terms, it's sort of in an Irish context? I have a fair idea, but I just want everyone to know why, how the Brazilian system operates, how that is of an interest to Europe and Ireland.
Yeah, I guess we're coming very close to the ratification or the approval of the Mercosur trade deal, and that's one of the biggest trade deals that Europe has ever completed with a trading bloc of countries. And that's a good deal for big business. It's a good deal for European car manufacturers. It's a good deal for technology companies. And it's a good deal for white good manufacturers. It's worth billions to those companies. So it's a good deal for big business. However, it's a very bad deal for the European beef industry because as part of that trade deal, Europe are given access to the South American bloc of countries for 99,000 tonne of a reduced tariff rate on that 99,000 tonne of beef. And there is potential there to really decimate the European beef market. And there is an argument there that the beef produced in these countries is produced to a substandard and to different regulations. Europe, in the last couple of months, would have argued that Brazil have raised the level of production that they're doing to meet European standards. But what we found out there was something completely different.
Talk to us about the, I was going to say the highlights, but potentially the lowlights of the gaps that are evident.
Yeah, so we visited four states, as you said. We've travelled almost 3,000 kilometres across a number of states. We visited farms, we visited livestock marts, and we visited agricultural supply stores. And it was in those agricultural supply stores, 13 of them, that we were able to purchase sort of critical high-level antibiotics just across the counter. We'd no Portuguese, we'd no herd number, we'd no tag number, and we'd no proof of requirement that we needed that antibiotic. All of those products that we purchased had prescription-only medicine wrote on the box, and they were to be given under veterinary guidance, but they didn't know who we were, and they just threw it out to us across the counter. And I guess in the fight with AMR, antimicrobial resistance, we're losing antibiotics on an annual basis in terms of those. So we've some critical antibiotics. An example of those are third-generation cephalosporins. The product we bought in Brazil was Cetavir. That's used in human health, and it's the last line of defence for somebody maybe that has sepsis where other antibiotics have failed. So it's a really critical antibiotic, and it's very important that we use it responsibly, that we don't lose it in the future to save people. And here we are in Brazil, just being able to buy it across the counter. And I guess that's substandard. It's not the same standard that we adhere to in Europe. Like if we want to use an antibiotic on a farm in Ireland, we have to ring up a vet. They have to come out, consult you. They have to make a professional opinion on that animal. They have to write you a prescription. They give you the product. They record that product going onto your farm, but the farmer also has to record that product, and the farmer has to record the usage of that product, and then the farmer has to adhere to a withdrawal period for that animal that they treat until it enters the food chain. With no database for sales of antibiotics, no database for use of antibiotics in Brazil, that can't happen. So it's not a level playing field, and it's not the same.
So how might the EU then ensure that the beef that arrives in the EU matches EU regulations then? Because that is the very lowest bar to a fair playing field, let alone about anything else, cost, etc.
Yeah, I guess Irish farmers are just looking for that. It's a level playing field. We're not saying we export 90% of the beef that we produce. We can't say stop imports coming into Europe because we depend on beef exports for our industry. So we're just looking for similar production standards. So the EU has to go to Brazil and say, have you got an animal traceability database here from birth? Because that's the way it is in Europe. And are you recording all medicines from the day of birth until that animal enters the food chain? Is there an accurate record? At the moment, there is not. We have proven that. We have the undercover footage from the supply stores. We sought expert opinion on this when we came home. We went to Professor Martin Cormick in the University College of Galway, and he just said Europe has been a leading light in fighting the battle against antimicrobial resistance and restricting the use of antibiotics on farms and responsible use in hospitals. And this is completely contrary to 20 years of work
So that's the over-the-counter stuff. Is that separate then to in-feed antibiotics? Because that's not even targeted, presumably.
Yeah, so we found evidence of that as well. It's an in-feed antibiotic called Momentin. It also has growth promotion characteristics. So that's been fed on farms wholesale. And the EU has banned that since like 2003. We also found evidence of being able to purchase hormones. Again, hormones, estradiol 17 beta, that's been banned in Europe since 1981. And here it is, we can buy it across the counter in Brazil. So it really isn't acceptable, and questions have to be asked about, was there due diligence done, or was there enough research done on, or we've just taken Brazil's word on meeting the production standards to get into the European market, and what happens from here?
Yeah, I'm not sure, would the cattle be moved here slaughtered or alive? I presume it's slaughtered, right?
No, the beef will come in here, right. And I guess it will come in as a steak cuts in here.
If that were analysed, for an example, right, so presuming someone, you can get paperwork from anywhere, right? If that were analysed, would it at that point still show sort of the hormones, the antibiotics and what have you, I wonder?
Yeah, you can do residue testing, but the chances of doing residue testing on every kilo of beef on 99,000 tons is pretty slim in terms of catching that. So you're dependent on them, and with no level of recording of those of that medicine use, they can't record it because there isn't tags in the animals, so they can't record the use of that medicine. And to be honest, on the ground, speaking to farmers, a lot of them don't want that level of recording and don't want that regulation.
Why would you?
Yeah. No. And they just want, China's taking a lot of their beef, they just want to concentrate in the Chinese market and leave the...
Of course.
So this is a deal for big business.
I mean, if hormones have if certain antibiotics have your cattle grow bigger and you're selling them by weight, why would you want that stopped? Okay, very interesting. It's a full investigation in today's Irish Farmers Journal. Thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye-bye. Now, Midlands Northwest MEP Kieran Mullooly, he's not happy with shackles on the conversation about this deal. To paraphrase, I think, correctly, I'll get to him after this break. Now, we just heard from the Irish Farmers Journal, Brazil exposed, illegal antibiotic trade uncovered, zero medicines recording, no database to track sales, tagging and traceability issues, health professor shocked. Well, we rely then, don't we, on our MEPs to scrutinise these deals as best they can, but we hope their hands aren't tied in doing so. Kieran Mullooly is an MEP for Midlands Northwest, and I suppose scrutiny of deals like the Mercosur deal become even more important off the back of fantastic investigative journalism there from the likes of the Farmers Journal.
Absolutely, Greg. Good morning to you and good morning to your listeners in Donegal. I have to say the Journal have done us a great favour. To be quite frank about it, a group left this very Parliament building in Brussels a few weeks ago, came back, went to Brazil, went along with some senior ministers from Ireland and some other people on a food promotion. They didn't come back with this story, Greg. They came back with a glowing report on the tremendous markets there were for other Irish products in Brazil and the standards that were out there. This is a different story. And this is the story we were told many, many times in the European Parliament by other witnesses who've been there. There is widespread illegal sale of animal drugs, animal antibiotics in Brazil. That's a fact. The Journal reporters travelled 3,000 kilometres, Greg. They went to four different provinces and they could walk in off the street without an ID, without a herd number, without anything at all, and just buy more and more antibiotics.
Yeah,
and
but you know what happens. It seems the EU is prepared to allow this to happen because the likes of the Germans, I'm sure, want to ship as many cars as they can to Brazil and others producing white goods, ETC. And if that means, you know, this potentially polluted meat coming into the EU market, well, so be it.
Well, that may well be the message from the Commission. And, you know, they'll talk about safeguards, Greg. They've talked about all these additional measures in the last few days, in the last couple of weeks. I'm not buying any of that because I know from these reports from the Journal, and we've heard it before, there's an MEP from the Netherlands who sits beside me here. She worked as a veterinary surgeon in Brazil for 6 years. She tells me all the time of the practice. And, you know, Greg, there's one really, really, really important thing about this report in the Journal this morning. The overuse of antibiotics just isn't a major issue with regard to animals.
No, it's
a huge issue for humans. You know, it seems to me there's no appreciation in Brazil of the antimicrobial resistance, which is, in plain person's language, is the overuse of antibiotics. Mm. You know what happens when we get overuse of antibiotics? If it's coming through the meat chain into the human situation, our immunity will be reduced all the time and antibiotics will not work for us. That's the bottom line if this goes on. And that's why I'm really concerned about this report today.
Yes, and it's in the context, too, of your accusation that the European Parliament seems to be blocking scrutiny of the Mercosur deal. Is it the legality of it rather than, you know, the potential impacts of this meat coming into this region?
Yeah, they're saying to us, Greg, it's a procedural issue that, you know, they're saying that we want the trade bill sent over today to the European Court of Justice. Why? Because it's all about the treaties, really. Your listeners in Donegal will remember being dragged back on a number of occasions to vote on treaties, EU treaties. Do you remember Lisbon? Do you remember Maastricht? Do you remember other ones? Well, during the course of those debates, we were told that we would not lose key Irish issues, not control of key issues, such as trade. in those situations. Here we are now. The European Commission tells us they're going to bypass our Parliament. They're going to proceed without a vote in our Dáil. And that's why I want to challenge. They're claiming it has to pass the European Council of Ministers first, that it would be passed by the Council. Then we could send it to the courts. That could be months away, Greg. In the meantime, the doors will have opened for the Brazilian trade. And in my mind, it'll be too late.
Well, what do you and like-minded MEPs have in your arsenal to resist this?
I can tell you what we have. For starters, we have 145 MEPs who signed that petition. That is a very decent share of the floor of the European Parliament. We'll be in Strasbourg next week and we will once again put pressure on the President to allow us to vote. If she doesn't do it, Greg, I've heard talk in the corridors here this morning of MEPs disrupting the business of the Parliament. So if we're not going to be allowed, we're playing by the rules at the moment. And we're being told the rules don't allow it. But if we're not going to be given an opportunity to speak up for farmers and to speak up for our constituents, we'll have to look at it again. And that may well mean some type of filibustering or some sort of disruption of the Parliament business.
All right. Well, I won't disrupt Parliament business any longer by holding on to you. Thanks for joining us this morning. Kieran Mullooly, MEP for Midlands North West. So obviously some resistance, 140 plus MEPs resisting that. Is there Bovaer, the product that stops cows breaking wind, in the dairy products that we consume? Are the dairy products that we consume safe? Well, I'm sure there's plenty of people still out there farting, even if they're drinking the milk, but I presume that's not your question. They say that I know that cows are dropping dead in Denmark. Well, I'll have to do a bit of research into that. I haven't heard about that. Everything seems to be centred around Denmark this weather. Right, we'll be getting the news headlines for you at 11 after these messages.